live
on history.fm and liveparanormal.com radio. This is a special edition of Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. This is John DeSalvo, your guide for the next 60 minutes. I want to thank you for being with us tonight. What is ritual or ceremonial magic? Can anyone do this? Is it dangerous? What precautions should one use? We'll be looking at these questions tonight and discussing them, and since I do not have a guest, I will be talking about my research and personal experience in this area. As many of you know, I have written two books on the subject, The Lost Art of Enochian Magic and Decoding the Enochian Secrets, both published by Inner Traditions, Bear & Company. So, one of the really interesting things I like to discuss are my actual personal experiences with Enochian magic and actually how to do it. I will go over the procedures and give you some hints and also discuss spiritual protections, which are very, very important in this area. Actually, the protections that I do teach can be used almost anywhere, even in ghost hunting. But before I get into this area, I just want to remind you of our radio website at drjohnradio.com. That's drjohnradio.com. And at this site, you can see a list of our upcoming guests, all our past programs, and you can even download past programs for free. Find this at other radio websites and other internet stations. Liveparanormal.com does a tremendous job here for listeners and guests and hosts and everyone. And hope you become part of this network and express your appreciation to Rob, the owner, because he is just really moving ahead and bringing wonderful things to the station. So I want to thank him and the whole staff at the station for all they do. The other thing I want to do is have open lines tonight. Many times, I run out of time with my guests. The guests are so fascinating. We only have an hour. And before I know it, time's up, and we didn't even have time to take any calls. So I hope you call tonight for some questions for me. You can call in at 619-639-4606. That's 619-639-4606. If you misplaced a number, just go to the radio archives, drjohnradio.com, and the number is posted right at the top. And my email address is there. I check my email during the show. So if you have a question, you want to email it to me, go right ahead. Tomorrow night at the same time, which my regular schedule show, is we're going to have a well-known crop circle expert from Canada, Joseph Mark Cohen. And he just came out with a newly designed deck of crop circle oracle cards. I have a deck of these. They're just phenomenal. They combined astrology, tarot reading, the Kabbalah, and beautiful crop circle pictures. So he'll be on tomorrow night, and I think you really enjoy that program. So, well, you know, maybe I'd like to do a little news update regarding crop circles, and maybe I'll try to remember to ask Joseph Mark tomorrow night about this. About a couple months ago, I was watching the news, and my good friend Michio Kaku was on. He's a famous physicist from City College of New York, CCNY, and he's a professor of physics and also one of the founders of string theory, which has been my interest for many years. And he appeared, I think it was on Fox News, and supposedly physicists were getting together to go to Stonehenge and reproduce crop circles, you know, in farmlands, because they believed they found out how the crop circles were produced. Now, don't get too excited, because I'm very skeptical about this, but Professor Kaku was saying was that he believes, and the physicist believes, the crop circles are man-made, and they're made simply by using a wooden board with ropes. As we know, some of the primitive ones initially were done. But in addition to the wooden boards is a microwave and portable generator. Now, why a microwave? Well, the portable generator would be able to power the microwave out in the field. But the microwave radiation supposedly softens the stalks of the crops. So when you press them down with the boards, they bend and you can form the patterns. And you use a GPS to position the crop circles and the intricate patterns. So basically, it's the wooden boards and ropes, a microwave, portable generator, and a GPS. They did find some microwave radiation and crop circles, and the bending of the stalks with microwave seemed to reproduce some of the actual stalk bending in crop circles. So the physicists, a group of them, were going to go to Stonehenge and recreate this. They believe they can do it in a couple hours or overnight, like the original crop circle, like the crop circles that we find, and they also will produce the intricate patterns of the crop circles that are seen. I'm very skeptical because, look, crop circles have been around for decades, if not eons. You know, they're noted throughout history. They're found all over the world in different places. And I can't believe everybody who produced these crop circles knew about microwaves and portable generators and other problems like sound. Wouldn't people hear the sound bringing this equipment out and running it? So I think it's interesting. I think this illustrates a point. For certain skeptics and believers of the paranormal, they're going to do everything to try to show that it's just a normal physical phenomenon. And I think that's good because many times it is, and we need to eliminate that. But when there really seems to be something supernatural or something unusual going on, they have trouble opening up to that and saying, well, you know what, maybe there is this possibility. And I think that's a big limitation to science this day. They're not as open as they were, say, in the medieval times or even hundreds of years ago. And I think that's something we need to hope that we hopefully will change and scientists will become more open-minded. Again, that's one of the reasons I went into this field, not only because I was interested ever since I was a kid in the paranormal, but I felt I could bring my knowledge and experience of science, you know, into it. So if any of you know anything about this, and I haven't heard anything, I've been searching the internet, looking at news, I have heard nothing about this group of scientists at Stonehenge recreating these crop circles. And I would think by now they would have done this because this was months and months ago that I heard Professor Kaku, and I think they were supposed to be going to Stonehenge quite recently. So you have the call and number, and 619-639-4606. So if anyone out there has any information on these crop circles that the physicists are recreating, please call in and let me know. Well, let's talk a little bit about magic. And usually, we're obviously not talking about the sleight of hand magic that, you know, Harry Blackstone and some of the other sleight of hand magicians do, but the magical magic, the supernatural magic, the ritual magic or ceremonial magic, as you want to call it. And many of you know I had Lon Milo Duquette, one of the world's famous ceremonial magicians, on my show several weeks ago. But I want to talk about my own work tonight. Even though he was the inspiration, I did something different with magic. So how did I even attempt to get into magic is a good question. My colleagues say, well, you know, your degrees and training is in biophysics. You taught biochemistry and physiology, neurophysiology. How did you ever get into the realm of magic? They could see my interest in the Great Pyramid and Dead Sea Scrolls and maybe even spiritualism because it's an interesting area. But magic, they usually attribute it to people with dark robes and chanting strange words burning incense and doing all sorts of things. And in general, that could be correct for many of the types of magic, like the magical groups. But to get back to the question, how did I get into this? I think it was just a normal growth of my research into the paranormal. I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people that are probably listening and people that have an interest in the paranormal had it since childhood, like I did, since junior high school, probably even elementary school. I was always interested in ghosts and psychic stuff and why things happened. And I tell you, about 30 years of my life, I bought every how-to-do book on the paranormal, how to develop psychic ability, how to do astral projection, how to contact angels and spirits. There's probably not a book out there I didn't buy and try. I don't know if this story sounds familiar, because I wanted to have a metaphysical or spiritual experience. That was my objective, or cosmic consciousness, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I even took Zen Buddhism. You name it, I did it. Unfortunately, nothing seemed to work. I never gave up. Why? Because you have this drive within you to find the truth, to experience this reality. You know it exists, but it's just a step away from you. So you don't give up. Then you buy the next book. You try the next technique. You take the next class. This probably went on for about 30 years. And it was very frustrating, but I never gave up. And then one day, I picked up a book. Actually, it was Lon Milo Duquette's book on Enochian magic. And what Lon had done is the original Enochian magic rituals that were first published or put out to the public were put out around 1900s by Israel Regardi, a famous Golden Dawn magician, and also Aleister Crowley, who was another famous magician of the OTO society. They brought magic to the public. It was secret up to then, but they published their books and articles on how their group did magical rituals. So it opened it up. So that was a big step. Then Lon took what they did and made it simple so you could do it at home. He improvised a ritual apparatus. He said you could make it out of paper or cardboard or even do without it. But he got people to be able to do it at home without having to join these magical groups. So that's what I did. I figured I might as well give it a try. And the first time I did the Enochian magic ritual, it just blew open the veil. It was like night and day. I was in an altered state of consciousness, and I felt the presence of the angels, and it was just, a revelation. The best way to describe it is it blew open a veil. And by the way, I know when I'm in an altered state of consciousness because I did meditation since 1970s, and I did have a medical center once hook me up to monitoring devices. I used to teach biofeedback, so I know a lot about this, and they monitored my EEG, GSR, all the different physiological values, and I know when they drop or change what the sensation is like. So I can determine all of a sudden I may have a change in my GSR, my blood pressure, my temperature, or whatever, because I've been monitored and I know what these changes feel like. So this was like a drop much deeper than anything I've experienced in 30 years of meditation. So that's when I thought, wow. Then I studied what Lon put together, and I realized I can even get rid of a lot of things that aren't necessary. Get rid of all the superficial stuff and bring it down to the basis. Now, Enochian magic is called Enochian magic because it was based on what the angel supposedly gave the prophet Enoch of the Bible. He was, remember, that guy in Genesis who never died. God took him and showed him the higher realms. And he came back and gave that information to his sons and others. And supposedly it was passed down, but then it was lost. But in the 1500s, the angels gave Dr. John Dee, the famous mathematician and advisor to Queen Elizabeth I, this information. And my book goes into the whole details of the history of it. Not, I don't want to go into that tonight. It's just I just don't have time. But he got that information, and it was in his diaries, and it wasn't published to after his death. And that was the information that was out there that was based on the Golden Dawn and OTO, Aleister Crowley's group, and even Lon's book. Unfortunately, when they put out the Enochian magic information, they used a reprint of John Dee's diary that was done by Casaubon. And there were many errors in there. And the Enochian call, which is like a long mantra, that I call it a long mantra, that opens up the realm. There were a lot of inaccuracies. So I spent a year studying the diaries of John Dee in the British Library and put together what I believe the angels felt was the most precise pronunciation of these so-called Enochian calls, which is the key to the magic. In fact, John Dee even wrote in his margins hints on how to pronounce them, what the angels told him. And none of these were incorporated in the Casaubon reprint. So Regardi and others who tried to reproduce these calls didn't have this information. So I put together what I felt were the best calls, and I got a little bit ahead. So what I did was I got rid of all the superficial things that I didn't think were necessary, and I thought, what did the angels just give Dr. John Dee? What did they just have him use, and what was the most effective aspects of it? And that's what I did. I turned it into the most basic, I would say, meditation. I called it a meditation because instead of having to do any ritual, you would just sit in a comfortable chair, and you would read through something, pronounce something, and do a procedure, and you would enter this realm. Now, that made it simple. It opened it up for every person to be able to do this. I guess I just should say one thing. Enochian meditation or Enochian magic may not be for everyone, and you have to decide for yourself. Obviously, if you have any psychological problems or imbalance, I would not do any Enochian magic. So, you know, if you're fairly stable and, you know, you may want to consider, you know, as an adult, you may want to consider doing it. I've done this procedure hundreds and hundreds of times, never had a negative experience. Lon Milo Duquette for 20 years gave group studies with this and never had a negative experience. So that doesn't mean no one else will, but I just want to say it's a very safe form in our opinion, and something, you know, you may want to consider trying, but you have to use your judgment. That's why I recommend people reading my book first, not because I want to sell books. Believe me, I don't make that much money from them, but I think you should read my book or another book to get an idea of what you're doing and is it right for you, and so you know what you're getting into. I think that's a fair suggestion for almost any new thing you're going to do. Make sure it's right for you. So that's what I did. I put together I named it EM or Enochian meditation because it was like a meditation. And what this procedure was, very, very simply, was you do a protection. And I'll go over what that protection was. There's many different types of protections you can use. Now, that was added by me. John Dee never used protections when he contacted the angels. He prayed incredibly before, like a half an hour, even an hour, reading the Bible and Psalms and prayers to God. And maybe that was his form of protection. But I recommend several different types, and you can use whatever you like there's a white light protection. And maybe I'll just explain that real quickly because we want to take one thing home from this little discussion tonight is that you have something you can actually do tonight before you go to bed or whenever you want. But the white light protection is very simple, and many people know about it. I know a lot of my friends who are ghost hunters use it whenever they're out, you know, investigating a home or a mansion or, you know, a cemetery. All it is you just kind of either sit or stand, close your eyes, or you can keep them open. I always like to close my eyes because I can visualize better. And I visualize like a white light around me, kind of a beautiful, bright, brilliant white light that comes from God, that comes from the source, the light, whatever you want to call the creator, whether you want to call him God, the force, the energy, it doesn't matter. And I usually say three things to myself. I usually say, I start to visualize this light like a sphere around me, surrounding me, glowing, brilliant. And I say, may the white light surround me. You could say that to yourself or out loud. Then may the white light elevate me and put me in touch with my spiritual guides. You can just say, you know, may the white light put me in touch with my spiritual guides or my spiritual advisors. Well, you know, the wording doesn't matter. It's the intention. And then the third thing is may the white light connect me with the divine light or the light of God or the force, the energy. So you ask the light to surround you, to connect you with your angelic beings or guardian angels, and put you in touch with God. And you visualize this white light around you, sometimes pulsating. It could be blue or white. White is usually what most people use. And what it does is it blocks out, as far as I could tell, negative vibrations or influences or anything that would not be beneficial to you in this procedure. And you can even do that before you go to bed. Just, you know, if you lay in bed, just do this in your mind. And I'll tell you one thing, I bet you'll have a more peaceful sleep. There's not maybe negative influences hitting you or people sending you negative vibrations, but there's just so much in our atmosphere that bombards us. I mean, we can't see what's going on. I mean, if we could see in the different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum, we would see radio waves, TV waves, gamma rays, infrared rays, you know, none of the stuff we can see hitting us. And in the spiritual realm, there's a lot of energy that's all around us that's bombarding us and kind of saturating us, you know. So I don't know. I guess it's something that I would seriously, there's not much to risk to do it, and it takes a couple minutes. And like I said, I know a good friend of mine who's a ghost hunter, and she says whenever she goes into a ghost hunting situation, she always does the white light protection. The other thing that I would probably do is to light a candle. Again, this is optional. And the reason I usually light a candle when I meditate, and always never leave a candle unattended, of course, but it, for some reason, and we don't know the answers, candles attract spirits and angels. They can kind of see that in the other realm. It kind of lets them know something's going on. Why do you think in most churches since the medieval times or back thousands of years, even in the pagan ceremonies, they always use lighted candles? Maybe they didn't know why, but they knew it worked. They knew it was a catalyst for bringing in spirits or angels or whatever. So I would definitely, if you have a, if, yeah, I mean, obviously, if it's a situation where lighting a candle would be dangerous or you can't do this, you don't want to do that. So that's the protection that I advise that you use, and that's the protection that you can just use whenever you feel like a lot of, you know, negativity in the air or you just want to relax. And it's really effective. I can't remember not doing it and not feeling better. And again, that you can improvise. By the way, you can even Google white light protection and get so many different versions of it. The other thing I use is known as the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. And that's a very interesting protection. That's more of a magical type of protection. And it's so old that no one even knows where it came from. But it is the most effective method of setting up a barrier around you and keeping out all negative energy. You know, I have that in my book. My first book, I also have a CD that comes with it, and I go through all these in audio, and I pronounce everything. But, you know, you can even search on the Internet. There's even YouTube videos on the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. So, you know, you don't have to buy my book to do that. But something you may want to try, again, that to me, that's perfectly safe. I've never had anything negative about it. I use that especially at night. If I'm going to bed and there's a lot of chatter in my head and I just feel it, you know, it just doesn't feel right, I'll do that ritual. It takes about 2 minutes to do. You stand up, basically, you face east, and you do like a sign of a cross, a different kind of sign of the cross using names of God. Then you do pentagrams in the east and in the south and the west and in the north, and you connect like a circle of pentagrams, and then you summon four archangels. And you end with like this, it's called the Kabbalistic cross. It takes, again, a couple minutes, real simple. I even do it in my head now. After you've done this thing for months and months or years, it just establishes itself on the astral plane. You don't even have to repeat it out loud and stand up and do it. You can just do it in your head, and it's just as effective. So and none of those actually Dr. John Dee did. So, but I recommend these for two reasons. Maybe we're in a different environment now than Dee was in the 1500s, and there's more kind of junk in the air, and we want to keep that out. And number two, it gives you peace of mind when you do this. You just feel more relaxed. You thought, you know, I did all the protections possible, and I can feel comfortable and confident that everything will be fine. So, you know, it's a combination of things. No magician, by the way, as far as I could tell, any experienced magician does any magical rituals without opening and closing with the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. So, again, I strongly recommend in any kind of metaphysical ritual or whatever exercise, you use some kind of protection. And there are probably others out there, but in my experience, these two were very effective. So, let's see, I'm jumping around here. So basically the magical ritual is you do the protection, you sit down, and then what you do is you have something known as the Enochian call. The angels gave this to Dr. John Dee. It almost sounds like you're reading a bunch of nonsense words, because it's in the Enochian language, the language of the angels. It was translated, and certain books give you the translation of the Enochian call. And the Enochian call, again, like I mentioned, I suggest you read it out loud. Like I said, it's in my book. You can even find them online. But I really suggest you read, if not my book, some book that gives you the background and basis of this before you start doing it. So you start reading through this Enochian call, and it is like a mantra. And as you read through it, you probably won't notice anything, but I'm very observant. Your body starts to change into an altered state. And when you get done, you are in like another realm. And how many realms are there? Are they different realms? And the answer is yes. The angels told John Dee that there were 30 realms between the earth and God or the highest heavens. And when you use the Enochian call, he gave a different call. The angels gave Dee a different call for each of the 30 realms. And actually, you only have to change one word in each of the calls for each of the realms. And each of the realms that you want to enter is, I would say, guarded or protected by three or four angels. And the realms go from 30 to 1. That is the 30th angelic realm, or the angels call them aethers. The 30th is closest to our earth, so it's the least deep realm. Then the 29th is closer to God, the 28th is even closer, until you get to the first aether, which is the closest. Now, you always start by going into the 30th realm first, and you do only one realm per meditation, or one per day at the most. Sometimes you do one realm for months before you even try the second one. Very interesting, Aleister Crowley, who actually entered all these realms, and I think started in the 1900s, he did the 30th and the 29th, and then he couldn't go any further. He had to wait like 7 or 8 years until he proceeded to the 28th and 27th. I was not aware of Crowley's work with the aethers. When I found out, Lon told me not to read or learn anything about it until I went through it so I could experience it independent, so his experiences wouldn't affect me. So I had no idea. But I had a similar thing. I went into the 30 real easy. That's the closest to us, and many of us sometimes go into that without even realizing it. And then I did the 29th, and then I got stuck. I couldn't go beyond it. I just felt like an awe, and it took me months till Lon pushed me on and said, just move on, and I did. So it was very interesting. Even independently, people experienced the same thing. So Crowley recorded his experience of the 30 aethers in a book called The Vision and the Voice, which I did not read until I went through the number of aethers that I could get through. And I have some of them were very similar experiences in terms of what I saw, the angels, and some were different. So I think it's an objective reality. A question people sometimes ask is, how do you know it's not in your mind? Or is this a real world, a real objective reality? And I would say, well, when different people do it and experience the same thing in different aethers, to me, that's evidence it's an objective world. Maybe it's a collective unconsciousness. Who knows? But if it was in our subconscious, in our imagination, we would all experience different things. Plus, I was trying to solve some cryptology that Dee wrote back in the 1500s. The angels gave him. They hid certain things in his manuscripts. And some of the aethers, the angels gave me a clue on how to figure it out. And I did solve two major what I call mysteries that never been solved before due to my meditation in these realms. So that's the other objective aspect of it, is that, you know, if you just come out and say, oh, I felt good and I experienced angels, well, and everybody says that, how do you know it's not true? But, hey, guess what? I discovered something that nobody else had. What I actually discovered is the angels, there were 40, as I mentioned, the 30 aethers. And there are other realms and other types of Enochian magic, and there are supposedly 48 Enochian calls that opened up certain things, and they were given to Dee through something known as 48 tables. And I don't want to go into it, but the angels told him they would not give him the 49th table because it was too holy. And so no one ever searched for it. They said they would not give him the 49th call because it was too holy. So I think people just realized it didn't exist. But I felt it did, and I felt maybe it could be discovered. And I actually discovered the 49th table, which was hidden in one of Dee's diaries. It really wasn't hidden. It was right out in the open, but nobody noticed it. It's the best way to hide a secret. And I reconstructed the 49th table, which I published in my last book on Enochian magic. And is that contradictory with what the angels said? And the answer is no. They said they were not going to give him the 49th call. I didn't discover the 49th call, but I discovered the 49th table. And no one has contradicted it yet. I'm totally open. I mean, I could have it all wrong. And book's been out for over a year, and I encourage magicians to give me their input, and I haven't heard one thing yet. So I don't know. Maybe they're all mystified too, like I was. But the point being is, I'm not trying to brag that I discovered something, but I believe these realms, these aethers with the angels in it, are real. And when I go into each one, I can sense the presence of angels. And what's very, very interesting is that not only do I sense the presence of the angels, I can talk to them and get information. So what I'd like to do is want to take a quick break and station identification, and maybe come back and talk a little bit more about the angels and, you know, how do I talk to them, what do they tell me, and also please call in with some questions if you could. It's 619-639-4606, that's 619-639-4606, or go ahead and email me some questions if you don't want to call in. At actually, go to drjohnradio.com and just click on email, and I check my email during the show for questions. So be back in a few minutes, and just hang on, and look forward to continuing my discussion on Enochian magic.
For joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
We're back. You're listening to a special edition of Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. And we've been talking about Enochian magic, which I called Enochian meditation, and the angels and the realms and how Dr. John D. received it from the angels. And again, if you have any questions, please call in 619-639-4606. And again, tomorrow night I'll have Joseph Mark Cohen, the crop circle expert from Canada. So please tune in 10 to 11 Eastern Time tomorrow night for the regular edition of Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal. Sometimes I get it mixed up and I say Histories, Mysteries, and the Paranormal. I guess it doesn't matter. So, you know. Anyway, talking about the angels. Okay, so now let's say you go into the 30th Aether, and there are four angels, which are we call governors. The angels said were governors, or, you know, the guardians of the realm. And there are three in the rest of them. The 29 through 1 only have three guardian or protecting angels. So the 30th has four for some reason, and they have names. And, you know, I give the name, list of the names of the angels. And what you do is, after you repeat the Enochian call, you close your eyes and you repeat maybe one of the angels' names or all of them, whatever you feel like doing. You can repeat them over and over again or a few times. And what it's like is, let's say you walked into a new environment, a new world, a forest, and you're in a new place, and you wanted to talk to someone who was there, the guardian of that place, and you knew their names, you would call out their names. When they showed up, you would usually stop calling their names. So that's what I usually do. When I start feeling the presence of the angel who I'm calling, I kind of stop repeating their name. Now, you can just kind of just stay with them and see if they have something to say. Or it's not like some people see them, some people hear them, some people, everyone is different. I'm not a good imagination person. I don't usually see a lot of visual psychic things. I don't usually hear it either. I just kind of sense it. It just comes into me. And so I just experience them. And I say that each angel to me has a flavor. What do you mean a flavor? It's like, well, you know, if you put a lifesaver in your mouth, you know what flavor it is by the taste. If you run into someone in a room and you smell their cologne, you think, oh, I remember who that guy was. So it's a flavor, something about the angel, something about them that you know it's a certain angel. And so you get to know this after a while, and then you may want to call on the other angel. And like I said, you do the meditation for, I recommend, 15 to 20 minutes, and then you come out of it gradually. And again, I go through the procedures. I usually have a little statement where you thank the angels, and you know, kind of a departing type of statement. And then maybe do a prayer, and then you do the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, and you end. And it's, again, really very interesting. You when you come out of it, though, you know you were in a deep altered state. That's why you don't just jump out of this. So, oh, when you do it, make sure you take your phone off the hook, put a sign on your door, do not disturb, and, you know, try to be able to do this without being interrupted. And if you are, so what? You know how many times I've been interrupted when I've done this? I can't tell you the number of times, and nothing bad has happened. The only thing is, like, if you're jarred from a deep sleep, sometimes you feel, you know, kind of disoriented, and, you know, so that would be the main thing. You really want to come out of this gradually. So that's what it's called, the Enochian meditation. Unfortunately, like I said, I do not want to read the Enochian call over the air. I just don't think it's appropriate, but that's the key to it. How does it work? Well, my background is in physiology. Neurophysiology is what I did my research in. And so I'm very interested in brain mechanisms and figuring there's got to be some kind of brain mechanism that mediates for Enochian magic. I believe, you know, people always said we only use 10% of our brain. Nobody really knows what percent of the brain we use. It's only a guess because we don't know how the brain really operates. But we know it's not all being used. There's a large portion of the cortical areas that are probably not being used. Nature never does anything redundantly. I believe the whole brain has a purpose, or it's being used in ways we don't know. So I think the areas of the brain that are not being used or that we can't identify are ones that code for these altered states, for these different realms, that each realm activates, each Enochian call, like a mantra, activates an area of the brain that gives us perception into a certain spiritual realm. So the 30th aether, we read the 30th Enochian call, that opens up a certain specific area on the cortex, which allows us now to see or hear or experience this world. The 29th Enochian call would activate another area of the cortex, and so on. This could be tested, by the way, in a medical center because, you know, you could look at brain activity, have a person do this Enochian meditation, do the different aethers or realms, and see if there's any change in brain activity and what part of the brain would be active and which would not be active during these different parts of the Enochian magic. So I thought that'd be an interesting. I don't think anybody's done it. They'd have to find, I guess, a medical center that's willing to use the equipment and donate the time to do that. And I don't think that'd be easy to find today, the way, you know, tests are going on, and you know. Who knows what? But anyway, what can I suggest? The best thing is read about Enochian magic, Enochian meditation, and decide if it's right for you. And again, it may not be. And if it is right for you, you can give it a shot. So the other thing I'd like to basically talk about real quickly is that this Dr. John Dee, why did he get this information? Why didn't they give it to someone else? Again, nobody knows. We do not know why, let's say, the angels or God give certain information to others, except we know that, God has free will and can do whatever he wants. But Dee was the most, knowledgeable, incredible person at the time of the medieval time. He was a cryptologist, a navigator, a mathematician, a scientist, an amazing, amazing person. He had the largest private library of the time. So what I think is that Dr. Dee was perfect to get this information, because a lot of it wasn't like a cryptology, a kind of a coded form. So the angels wanted to use somebody who, let's say, was knowledgeable of cryptology, could put this together, because it was very complicated. So, again, there are a lot of different books out there on the subject. And I think, like I said, you have to decide if it's right for you, or is it something else you know, maybe it isn't. Maybe there's another metaphysical technique or that you would like to try. So, anyway, that's kind of what I really wanted to cover. And trying to think of anything else I'd like to add. But I'd say, you know, if you're a sincere seeker, you're honest with yourself, you try things that you feel are safe and you can handle, you'll find a technique or a method that may open up the spiritual realm for you. What am I going to say? It's really up to you. I just got a question about the pyramids, and somebody wanted to know more about pyramid power, and maybe I'll just take it. Shows getting towards the end, just kind of touch on my pyramid research for a while. My first book was called Decoding the Pyramids, published by Barnes & Noble. It was really a beautiful coffee table book. They featured it on the Father's Day table. It's been out of print, though. It's unfortunate, and I don't think they're going to reprint it, but it really was a great summary. It had the Russian research for the first time. The question I have is that they want to know more about the Russian research. I was the spokesperson for the Russians, scientists and the Russian research, and to release their information to the West. And unfortunately, my book was, as far as I know, the only book that had a comprehensive discussion of the Russian research. And you probably could get it on the used book market or, avebooks.com, or maybe, I think, on eBay. So it's probably out there. The head of it was Alexander Golod, who was director of Russian State Defense Enterprise at the time, and he had these pyramids built in Russia. I mean, giant pyramids, made out of fiberglass, one-third maybe the size of Giza. They cost millions of dollars to build, and they did all kinds of experiments with the Russian Medical Academy of Sciences, the Institute of Physics. The Ukrainian researchers were involved. Institute of Physics in the Ukraine was one of the top military research institutions during the Cold War, and a lot of those great smart scientists started doing pyramid research, and actually they're doing some real interesting psychic research. And so I was given this information to release to the world. I was the spokesperson of the West of the Russian research, and that's was fascinating. To me, it was one of the first scientific basis of pyramid power, and it gave us some indication of what's happening. So I haven't kept in touch recently with the Golods, so I hope that they may eventually say something. I think we have a question here. Let me just hello, you're on the air with John DeSalvo?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi. What's your name? Where are you from?
I'm Steven. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, hi, Steven. Well, thanks for calling. You have a question?
I was just wondering. It sounded like you're saying these realms. It sounded like you're saying that are they just in your head, or is it this something external, or is this just you're saying this is all just part of our brain? Like playing tricks on us or something, or is it a reality?
You know, that's really the million-dollar question. You really hit the basis of this. And the answer is we really don't know. I mean, I believe it's an objective reality, something different, not of our imagination, that if 100 people went into, the 26th aether, they would all experience a similar thing. People who are critical of magic and think it really doesn't exist would say, it's our subconscious. We just, we created ourselves, and it's a subjective experience. And now, unfortunately, how do you test that? And that's very difficult. To me, I don't know, maybe statistics. Maybe you get people to independently go into these aethers, and then you record your experiences, and then you compare them. So you sound like you're a scientist asking that kind of question.
Yeah, I just... I wasn't sure what if you know if, w- I wasn't sure if you were if you had your mind made up on that. Like, do you have an opinion on it? It sounds like you're saying you can explain it using the like brain stuff, but I didn't was unclear as to whether or not you believed that that was all that was going on. If there's more.
Yeah, I don't have a, you know, I can't give you a 100% answer. My guess is that it is real because it is a real objective place, just because it was really uncanny how when I read Crowley's Vision and the Voice, where he wrote a whole book on each of the aethers he explored. By the way, I can't go through all of them. I can only get down to about half. You can only go about as far as your spiritual development allows you at a certain time. Maybe I get a little further than half, but you go a certain distance and then you have to stop. It's not you can't do it. You do the calls and nothing really happens. But that there were so many similar experiences of the realms and of the angels, and other people like Lon who I've spoken to and shared experiences, it would be too much of a coincidence to have all our imaginations come up with the same thing independently. And plus, I was able to solve some, I would say, cryptograms or hidden information that I don't think I would have on my own, but the angels gave me some hints. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, yeah, I think it is an objective, real independent reality, but we really can't prove it at this time. It's more circumstantial evidence.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks for calling, Stephen. Take care. So, well, that was a really good question, and that's a question that is key. If it's of our imagination, you could say, or subconscious, what good is it? Well, you know, maybe it is good. You know, if we can sometimes explore our subconscious, we can look maybe at what we our fears and our likes or dislikes and what makes us tick and learn more about us. That, and a lot of psychotherapy does that. On the other hand, it could be dangerous. You don't want to open up your subconscious and bring things out that should be buried. So I don't know. But to me, I probably wouldn't be interested in this if I thought it was just my subconscious. I would hope it would be more an objective reality. But the question is still... it's still out there. So anyway, well, we're getting towards the end of the show, and I think I kind of discussed what I really wanted to cover in the areas of magic. And I thank you for listening to this special show. And I wanted to try out a new audio system too. I've been using a different one for my previous show. So if you have any comments on how this show sounded compared to my past shows, I would appreciate it. I'm trying to find the best sound system available so you can hear me as clear as possible. So please don't forget our radio archives at drjohnradio.com and drjohnradio.com. And like I mentioned before, you get a listing of all our past programs. We have our upcoming programs. You can download for free the audio archives of our past shows and find out about our guests, their books, their websites, how to contact them. So you got just about everything there you need and contact information for me. Again, I always like hearing from my listeners and always open to suggestions and criticisms. We want to have the best show possible for your listening pleasure, and hopefully it's not just enjoyment, that you take something from this show that helps you spiritually. People ask me why I got into this area, and I said it's because I wanted to grow spiritually and I wanted to help others, and that's the reason I wrote my books and used to go on radio and do interviews, and now I'm hosting the show because I like to help others and help them on their spiritual path and give them the hints and clues that I found along the way. And, you know, maybe it'll help some and not others, but that's the way life is. We try to help others with what we learned, and sometimes they're valuable tips, and other times people just don't find anything useful from them, and that's fine. We're all different. So I guess it's our intention. We try to help others. We want to help, guide others in the right direction. And to me, it's going towards the light. So anyway, I want to thank you for being with us tonight, and I want to thank LiveParanormal.com Radio and History.fm for hosting this program, and the owner, Rob Zierak, and Carl at Master Control, and ClassicalIndia.com for permission to use their music. But I want to thank most especially you, the listener, for joining us tonight, And don't forget, tomorrow night, same time, same location, we have another special guest. And again, until next week, or I guess until tomorrow night, good night, and may God be with you.